Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We are back. Welcome to the Touchdowns All Day with John Barber podcast. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today in the middle of this pandemic. The Touchdowns All Day podcast is the podcast that got Alan to sing, or at least talk a bunch. Yes, that's right, folks. We got Alan to talk a bunch, and it's huge. Today's podcast is going to be split into two parts for the first time in our podcasting history because Alan just got so damn candid. You've never heard anything like this from him. I've never heard anything like this from him. And it's terrific. It's great. Honestly, we talk a lot on the podcast about what is this podcast about? Why are we doing this podcast? And what is the point of this podcast? And if you listen to the next two episodes, episode 29, episode 30, Alan Volume 1, Alan Volume 2, and you don't think that this justifies the existence of the entire podcast in all its glory, then you and I got beef. Because this, I am so happy with these interviews and just the way Alan brought it. We have some great musical selections picked by Rich Steele of some amazing Alan drumming to go with it. It's a celebration of the best drummer in the world, Mr. Alan O'Quinn. Thank you for listening to the Touchdowns All Day podcast. It is a pleasure. This is what makes the job fun. I'm very excited. We are so excited. We even whipped out some merch. So for those of you who've always wanted a Touchdowns All Day logo t-shirt or a pin or maybe even a bathrobe. Do you want a bathrobe? I want one because they're awesome. Go to the website. It says shop in the nav bar and go to the merch site and buy something. 100% of the proceeds of our merch sales go to pay the team that brings you the podcast. So it's a really good cause. Very happy about the merch. It looks cool. It's dark and chill. We also, a lot of the guys in the Biscuits, I think all the guys in the Biscuits have been putting up lessons on Live Lesson Masters, which is a website that Mark has started with Alicia Carlin, and they're just doing a great job, and it's a really great way for you to speak to the people on stage. You know, do you want to talk to Mark? Do you want to ask him questions? Do you want to talk to Aaron about how he does what he does? Do you want to sit with Alan and play drums and talk to him about how to get better? Or do you want to listen to me go on and on about how the modes are all wrong and how you need to do things a different way? Whatever your flavor is, you can book a private lesson on livelessonmasters.com, and Alan's lessons are up there. So if you listen to this podcast and you are blown away by Alan, go ahead and get a lesson. It does help us through the pandemic, and it keeps everybody focused on music, which is good, you know. In this podcast, we talk a lot about doing things that are on message for what you're trying to do, what your great path is in life. If you're on your great path, sometimes you have to wander off of it every once in a while, but when you do wander off, you want to wander off and like gain a skill or get a power pellet or something like that. So I feel like giving lessons for me is like a little power pellet every morning. I do one lesson a morning. May is sold out, but we'll probably put some June lessons up soon. And during that lesson, I explain deep theory to whoever else is on the other side of the Zoom. And unfortunately for them, they have to listen to it. And at the end of that, you know what? I've talked a lot about music for an hour, and I feel like I'm in music head. I feel like I'm there. I'm ready to go. It's a little power pellet every morning. So, okay. So that's good news. DiscoBiscuits.net. A lot of you guys have never been there. Go to DiscoBiscuits.net. They just added the Touchdowns All Day podcast to their sidebar. Check it out. It's a brand new site. It is Rails and React for those of you who are curious. And it's looking really cool. It's a really great resource for the Disco Biscuits. Just go there and check it out for fun while you're watching TV. More Bisco news here. I mean, there's just so much to talk about. There's so much to talk about. I've been away for, what, a month? And I have so much to talk about that I have to do it over the next four episodes. So I'm going to cut those four episodes in the next 2 days, and we're going to drop them all at the same time. Right? So, and I'll probably talk about some of the stuff on each one just to make sure it's covered. So the Bisco news, which I'll be talking about a lot, is we have three concerts every night during the pandemic. Three concerts from the vault. We have a Wednesday night rewind, which is free. And then we have a Friday, Saturday, like light ticketed event. And it's Chris Lonergan's life's work. His all this footage that he's been very carefully corralling over the years. And a lot of times, you know, just out of pure passion and love for the band and for being a videographer. For those of you who don't know Chris Lonergan, you would know him if you've watched the YouTube video, because he's the one who makes those possible. And he's been doing that for years. And he's very great at it. And those are all been free for years. And he's a big part of bringing those to you. So we love Chris. And he is just a huge part of what makes being a Biscuit fan so great. Is his contributions to that. We can never thank him enough. There's so many people in our organization where you can just never thank them enough for what they do. And Chris is one of those people. So go to nugs.tv and you can watch these different Biscuit videos three nights a week. It's all old school stuff. It's like the band when we were young doing. I was watching one where I'm just like tapping on stage like Eddie Van Halen. I never do that anymore. But back in the day, I used to like to show off, I guess. So this is great. This is really great. It's a pleasure to be back on the podcast. It's really great to be talking to y'all. We did a r/jamband ask me anything on Reddit a few weeks ago. That was a huge success. And I'm sure you guys can go back and check that out if you want to. I answered a ton of questions in a half an hour. It was like rapid fire question answer. And it was really great. And then it was also great to see a bunch of other jam band guys hop on and do their AMAs right after. So I like the fact that everybody's kind of, you know, giving Reddit a little love. It's really nice to be able to get on there and talk to people in rapid fire. That's what we did. It's cool. A lot of great questions. Everybody was like, they were like, yo, so when you're on Reddit, if you see a question you don't like, just ignore it and you don't have to answer it and just move on. And I'm like, thanks. Thanks for the update. Like, I've never been to social media and I don't know how to ignore a bad question. Like, thank you. Can you write that down for me so I know when I see that? And honestly, I think I answered every single question. And if I didn't answer your question, it doesn't mean your question was annoying. It just means that I didn't see it, because, you know, how could you possibly ask an annoying question? That would never happen, right? That would never happen. I would never ask you one. Why would you ask me? So if I did answer one, I answered almost every single one. I swear to God. I was typing. I didn't know I could type that fast. I don't even know what I said to any of them. So if you want to see what, like, I wouldn't put those answers down as, like, this is what I really think. I would put those answers down as, like, that game you know, they play in the movies with the psychiatrist where they're like a Rorschach test where they show you the thing and you say bird, and then they show you something else and you say garbage can, and then they show you something else and you say rose bush, you know? That's kind of what the AMA was like. It was like a giant question-based Rorschach test for me in a half hour. It was kind of fun. I could do it again. I could definitely do it again. And thanks to Crunk Mike for setting that up. And thanks to the guys at our jam band. They also said that. All right, so today's subject of the podcast, people want me to talk about the baby. I have a baby. He's 2.5 months old. His name is Baby Shreds. I did not name him AKE12421 ever. It's a shame that we didn't do that, because then Elon would have copied us and that would have been hilarious. But we named him River, which is also a weird name, but we like it a lot and it fits him. And he loves water and he loves baths. And it's just going really well. It's perfect for quarantine. Those of you who have a new baby in quarantine, you're probably like, yeah, there's a little upside to the quarantine. There's a lot of downside. I mean, I must have lost millions of dollars worth of concerts that just vanished. So it sucks. But they're, you know, silver lining, trying to be positive, hanging out with the baby for hours and hours on end. And it's great. It's been really great. I don't mind the diapers. I don't mind the puking. I don't mind any of the mess. All the things that they tell you, oh my God, you don't want a baby because of blah, blah, because of puke on you or the diaper. The crying, the waking up, all the things they tell you are bad about babies. I don't know if I agree with them, honestly. I don't know if I agree. I think if I did this 10 years ago, I would have been fine. I mean, my whole thing was like, I don't want to do that too soon. I don't want to have kids too soon. I don't want to start a family too soon. because I'm a rock musician, and what I really need to do is lock myself in a cabin and get really creative and try and write the next great blah, blah, blah. And you know what I mean? Like, all that pressure you put on yourself to make yourself, to self-actuate, you know, which I'm sure a lot of you out there are sitting around saying, how do I self-actuate myself in whatever field I'm in? I talk to a lot of guitar players in the lessons, and they're all asking that same question. How do I go from where I am to part of something great? And let me tell you, you have a kid. It's a great way to be part of something great. I don't want to give advice that doesn't match your world. You know, don't listen to me. I'm just a guitar player, honestly. But I'm surprised at how much I like it. I think it's great. So little baby River and I are best friends already. I don't know. We just have a lot of fun trying to bring the grandparents into it, and a lot of trying to make the baby do push-ups and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think it's great. I think having a kid is wonderful, and I'm surprised that I like it as much as I do, honestly. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised. It sounds crazy to say that, but I always thought maybe quarantine is makes it easy, but it's pretty fucking cool. All right, so let's move on, but that's the baby. He's wonderful, and thank you guys for supporting and caring. And, you know, okay, so let me talk about one other thing. You know how, like, when you're single and, like, somebody, like, you go somewhere and somebody's kid is there, and you're just like, ugh, like, I don't even want to touch. What is that? I don't want to touch that thing, right? So my whole life, I would go places and I would see small children. I'd be like, ugh, like, don't let it near me type of thing, right? Because you don't want to break somebody's child, because then you're in trouble. Like, you know what I mean? You don't want to drive somebody's car, and you don't want to touch their child and, like, break it in some way. You know what I mean? So, especially me, because I'm a giant person. So I have to be very careful around tiny things and people. But now that I have a kid, suddenly, when I see another child, it's a total flip. It's total opposite. So instead of being like, you know, ugh, I'm like, aw, and I'm in it. You know what I mean? And then I can talk to the kid. I know how to pick them up and do the whole thing. So that's kind of like an ancillary win for me, because all my friends have kids, and it's annoying to be like, ugh, to all of their kids, you know? It's just really annoying to, like, walk into a room and see somebody's kid and be like, back away! You know, now I see the kid, I'm like, oh, you know, I know how to talk to you. I know how to pick you up. If you poop in your diaper, I can handle that situation. You know, I don't know if I'm looking forward to that, but hey, it wouldn't be the worst. If we end up in quarantine, I'm okay with that, you know? I'm okay. I could survive. So speaking of survive, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special thing that we're going to do on the podcast. And it's just like, you know, we're going to try this. I don't know what timeline it's going to be on, and I don't know how we're going to do it. But I think we have a good crew of people that could really get it done and make it fun. We want to make Touchdowns All Day Survivor Quarantine. How does that sound? It's basically a similar version of the Survivor TV show, except we're going to do it mostly over Zoom or whatever video conferencing software we use. And, you know, everybody participates and does the challenges in their house. So we think of fun challenges you can do from your house. And then we have some kind of over Zoom tribal council. And then, you know, we reserve the right to change the game and make it weird and do whatever we need to do to make it fun. So keep an eye out for Survivor Quarantine, the TV show that we're going to make, basically. It's going to go on the Touchdowns All Day YouTube page. And if you want more information about it, because we do need you to play, is go to touchdownsallday.com and click Survivor in the nav bar. You were there already earlier in the podcast for the merch. Now you're clicking Survivor in the nav bar for the game that we're all going to play together. And we'll see, you know, we need you guys to fill out a form and send in a little video so we know enough about you. We're going to choose contestants, and we're going to play some kind of version of Survivor, probably starting in June or something. I'm not sure. We don't really have the schedule that far ahead. And the quarantine is making things a little bit difficult as far as, like, getting our ducks in a row with it, because everybody's kind of scrambling. But I think we're going to make it happen, and I feel good about how much fun it's going to be. So a lot of positives. Join Survivor Quarantine. Play along. Bring all your friends on. Let's just do big groups of friends playing this really cool game, and then, you know, I'll run the tribal council, and then we'll vote somebody out. Hopefully not you. Hopefully somebody else. And then you you know, it could be fun. I don't know. Could be really fun. We're going to try it out. If you guys respond, then I know we got something. And if you guys blow it off, then we won't do it. You know what I mean? So it's up to you guys. TouchdownsAllDay.com. Click Survivor link and get more information. All right. So we do have a sponsor on the podcast to help us pay the bills in quarantine. I'm trying to make sure that people who work on the podcast get paid during quarantine because everybody lost their other job. You know what I mean? So this is our sponsor. It's Harry's.com, the razors. They sent me a bunch of razors. I tried them. I was expecting to think they were equal to... I usually buy whatever's the best razor you can get at CVS, right? And then I thought these ones were going to be equal to that or, you know, similar. But they're actually quite a bit better. They're just thicker. It's just a better blade. You know what I mean? I have like a thicker stubble, and this thing cuts through it in a much more durable and high quality way. I was impressed, so we decided to do the ads. The blades are $2 a pop or something like that, and you basically do a trial with them where they send you free stuff, and then you just buy the blades from them like you would. It's delivered to your doorstep. You know what I mean? So it's a subscription service for blades. If you shave, this is really how you should be doing it. Join the trial. Get some razors from these guys. I'm telling you, they're better. And then, you know, cancel the trial if you don't think they're better. But you're going to think they're better. They're just bigger, you know? It's just a better blade. So listeners of my show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/touchdowns. You get a weighted ergonomic handle for the firm grip. You get a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and the trimmer blade that goes under your nose. You get a rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and you get a treble blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/touchdowns to start shaving better today. That's harrys.com/touchdowns. And for me, the treble blade cover is great because I'm always traveling, and it's got to have a trimmer blade or I don't even want the razor. So it has all the modern functionality of a blade, but it's just a better blade. And I think, Harry's, if you're listening, you should change your slogan to, it's just a better blade. You know what I mean? And if you do want that slogan, you know, support the podcast and help us do what we love, which is bring great music to our fans. And also keep everyone informed. And also get a wicked, amazing interview out of the superstar, Dr. Famous himself, Mr. Alan O'Quinn. Let's hit the theme song. Let's get into it.
We're mass communicating. We're mass communicating. We're mass communicating.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're dropping 4 episodes this week. The first episode and the second episode are both going to be the Alan O'Quinn interviews because he is just so candid, has so much to talk about that we couldn't possibly fit it all in one episode. It's just too long, frankly. And we had a bunch of music we wanted to add in too because we want you to hear some of Alan's great drumming to go along with the great interviewing. It's just an all-in-all win for everybody. It's a quarantine win, if you will. and he does a wonderful job. And I just got to say, Rich Steele picked out a crazy amazing song for us today. This is, it's a little bit off of the song. We were talking about Shelby Rose in the interview with Alan, but we picked a different version because this version is just crazy. And we want you all to hear this because it's just some of the most stellar drumming on the planet. It's the most stellar drumming you'll ever find in the world, on any podcast ever. I don't think you need to go into your podcast app and delete every other podcast except mine, but I would understand it if you did. You know, just tell a friend. Tell a friend about the Touchdowns All Day podcast, and then, you know, maybe that'll help you. That'll help you satisfy how great the drumming is on this. This is from July 16th, 2016. This is a day set at Camp Bisco. So it's hot. It's Scranton, Pennsylvania. Everybody's in bathing suits. It's the summertime. The day sets are known for their lunacy because the lights aren't there and the band just gets kind of like, the band gets hard, you know? The band gets rock and roll. So let's see how Alan gets rock and roll in some crazy jungle. You can hear Alan's getting ready to take off. You can hear him feeling it. And he's just so crisp in the snare. And that snare just sounds great. And Pat really has it dialed in. And here it comes. We're taking off. Love it. Shreddiness personified, and the way the kick and the snare just play off each other. It's almost like two drummers.
Yo, everybody, give it up to Alan back here. He did it. He fucking did it. That shit's fast to play in this heat, man. You try it if you think it's such a no big deal. One more time, Alan, make some noise. Yes.
Mark taking a second to elucidate the realities of being a on-stage professional musician versus the mental musicians in the audience who are standing there saying, I could do that. But you know what? You got to get on the stage and you got to do it. And if it's 100 degrees outside and Shelby Rose is on the set list, yeah, you're going to end up playing 290 BPM probably. And hell, that's how you do it. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. Part one of Mr. Alan O'Quinn. Thank you. All right, folks. Welcome to the Touchdowns All Day with John Barber podcast. We have a very special guest today, our most requested guest, Mr. Alan O'Quinn. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay! Hello. How you doing?
So there's a little bit of debate about how your last name is pronounced. Do you want to set the record straight right now?
Yes. I actually pronounced it wrong, though, so... there's that. My family says O'Quinn, which is pretty normal, but I think if we were actually Cajun or French, we would say like O'Quinn.
Oh, right. Totally. That's like a French accent. Mm-hmm. Right there, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't know that. Are you French?
Cajun. My dad's Cajun. My mom's Cajun-ish.
Wow, a redheaded Cajun.
I have an uncle with red hair and blue eyes just like me on my dad's side.
And your brother has red hair too, doesn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Cajuns with red hair. It's wild. You know, you're the drummer of the band. You are living a very rhythmic perception of the world. Do you play Cajun music when you get a chance?
I don't. Nope. No Zydeco. My parents listened to just a little bit of it, but it wasn't really like a part of our home.
Were you young when that happened? How old were you when you listened to that stuff?
Probably like, I want to say like 6, 7, or 8. I can remember my dad would listen to it. He'd put it on when we would have like crawfish boils and stuff like that, but it wasn't really like what we saw on TV. It was like we had some friends over. It's also in Germany, keep in mind. My dad was in the military, so for 3 years we lived in Germany, and that's pretty much when I remember the Zydeco music. So I don't know if he was just trying to keep the American vibes alive while we were over there or what, but that's when I kind of remember it. So even when we would have family reunions, we wouldn't have like Zydeco blasting in the background or anything.
How does the crawfish boil go over in Germany?
Well, we lived on like a it's like an armed forces base, so it was like with fellow Americans. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just like a party thing, you know, an excuse to get together and hang out.
Were there other kids living on the base?
Yep, we lived in like they're called the barracks, but it was just basically an apartment building, and there's a bunch of kids. I think they kind of grouped you liked similar situations, you know.
Right. And so did you have other kids your age to hang out with?
Yep. Whole building, pretty much. Everyone seemed like, of course, you know, I was like 6 or 7, so who knows what the actual was, but it seemed like everyone had kids. There's a lot of kids to play with, so.
That sounds really fun. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like being at camp, but all the time. Are you still in touch with any of the people that you live with?
No. You know, I moved like every 2 to 3 years, so friends kept changing, and it was... You know, you don't realize, you know, you should really keep up until you're older, I guess. But I haven't really gone looking for, it's kind of hard to remember their last names, but I haven't really gone searching for them, you know, online or anything. But yeah, we moved around a lot, so.
Can you take me through the places that you lived and the order that you lived at them?
Yeah, I think I can. So I was born in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Because my dad was a Special Forces Green Beret, like 82nd Airborne Division badass, apparently, before I was born. Not apparently, like I've seen pictures. he's got like pictures of him jumping out of planes and stuff. We used to go watch him jump out of planes. But I was born in Fort Bragg. And then I think we moved to, I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong and my parents are going to let me know. I think we moved to Fort Polk, Louisiana. I believe we went back to North Carolina, and then we went to Germany, and then we came to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and then to Fort Benning, Georgia. And then by the time I got in high school, it worked out really well for me. By the time I started high school, my dad retired, so we stopped moving. So I had high school buddies, you know, didn't have to switch high schools.
Yeah, that's the tough one. Mm-hmm. You meet all these, you have to spend so much time with all these kids. And then your parents are like, oh, you got to go to this other school where everyone's going to immediately hate
right.
you the minute you walk.
Yeah, in. Being the guy with the red hair, you know, you're kind of an easy target sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
So Fort Bragg, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and you were there multiple times. Is that just kind of like a hub for...
I think it's like
for
a...
Army people?
I think it's a hub because he was in the military for 13 years before I was born, so I maybe have that wrong. Maybe 7 years. When I was born, he got out of the Special Forces, so I think Fort Bragg is the Special Forces hub, and I apologize to anyone I'm offending by getting all this information wrong. I should definitely know it, but Fort Bragg is the Special Forces hub, and then Fort Benning is actually like an airborne training school and ranger school hub, so he spent a lot of time at Fort Benning before I was born, because, you know, he was jumping out of airplanes and doing stuff that he can't talk about.
Is that nerve-wracking when your dad's gone for the day and you know that he's on some mission practice where he's got to jump out of an airplane and do dangerous stuff?
For me, he stopped jumping out of airplanes when I probably... Because he wasn't jumping out of airplanes when we went to Germany, so I think I was about 4 or 5 when he stopped jumping out of airplanes. For me, it was cool. I mean, my dad was jumping out of airplanes, and he was soaring through the sky and, like, you know, coming down on a parachute. It was awesome. I thought, you know, it was great. But my mom, I'm sure it drove her crazy. You know, anything could happen. Yeah. You could land fine and still break your ankle, you know, and then, or your parachute can't open. He's got some pretty crazy stories about parachutes not opening. So, you know, I'm sure it was real nerve-wracking for my mom. But for me and my brother, it was the coolest thing ever. So,
yeah, because jumping out of planes is one of those things that's super, super dangerous. You know, I'm sure jumping out of a plane behind enemy lines where they could shoot at you is perhaps the most dangerous thing you can possibly do.
Yeah.
But even doing it in North Carolina is... Everything's got to go right. So there was times where he jumped out of the plane and the parachute didn't open. What happens then?
I don't think it was ever his parachute. There was a time... I believe it was like a fellow soldier he was jumping with. His didn't open. I think he and another guy had to, like, go get him in the air somehow, and then they got his chute open. I don't know. Pretty crazy story.
Somebody else flew over to him.
Yeah, kind of like you see in the movies that actually happened, and they, like, helped him stabilize. I don't know how they got him. If he had, like, a reserve chute that he needed help with, or if they were, you know, holding the guy together and they were all under one chute, I'm not sure. But yeah, there's something. He told a story once of how he and another dude had to, like, fly in the air and help this guy out, something like that. Pretty crazy. He's got a lot of stories.
You know, like, fly over to him and catch him, Iron Man
yeah,
style,
totally.
Right? Like, Tuesday,
right.
Let's go into the sky. That is crazy. So. Did you think when you were younger, I'm going to go do
yep.
that, I'm going to be a Green Beret?
I thought so. I wanted to do Special Forces, you know, like, it's cool, and they do such elite things, yeah. and they're, like, dudes that are, like, in shape and kick ass, so, yeah, it was cool, but my dad didn't necessarily want me to do that. It was, like, my idea. He didn't really, like, put that idea in my head. My brother, too, he wanted to do it, and my dad really wasn't really, I don't know if he wasn't supportive, he was just... He didn't really push it. But I actually have asthma. And also, I had like a weird hole in my eardrum when I was a kid in my left ear. And they had to do like this reconstructive surgery. So there's like a minor hearing loss. And whenever I was 18, I still wanted to be in the Special Forces. And my dad was, you know, you have asthma and you have this hearing thing. So they're probably not going to take you. No offense. So, kind of crushed me for like a few hours, but I found other things.
You found other things indeed. I think this story will make a lot of sense. I mean, the fans sent in a bunch of questions. They are all kind of scratching at the surface of, are you a superhero? That's a lot of what we got, and it ends up that you kind of are in a weird way. Or you were training to be a superhero your whole life, and you just ended up in drums.
I had a keyboard player I used to play with that knew the story about my dad, and he was a little older. He called me Special Forces of Drums. He was a character. So, nice. Yeah, I like that.
Special Force on the drum. Is it Special Force on the drums?
He would say Special Forces of Drums.
Special Forces of Drums. Love that. That's amazing. So did you play music with him?
Yep. His name was Dr. Dan. I don't know if anybody remembers that him. But he was...
I remember Dr. Dan.
Played with him for like 2 years or so.
When was that?
That was a couple years before the Disco Biscuits. Because we weren't playing whenever you guys hit me up. I remember we crossed paths with my band, old band, with Johnny and Pat, Skydog, Gypsy. We did a couple shows with Dr. Dan. I don't remember how we started jamming, but we started jamming. And then I didn't do too many shows. It was maybe like 10 over 2 years. So.
And what instrument were you playing?
I was on drums and samples, you know, and then Dr. Dan was doing his thing on his Rhodes and Wurlitzer.
And how did you get linked up with him? What were you doing before that? Were you in another band? Were you just in the scene?
I was in a band called Skydog Gypsy. We played for not too long. It was maybe 1990. Well, they were a band before I got in, but I got in around 1998. And then we played officially till, maybe 2003, I think. But that band kind of toured a lot in the Southeast, and Johnny and Pat from Disco Biscuits, Lights and Sound, were actually Lights and Sound in that band, too. So,
that's right.
Yeah, and that's how, you know, we did a couple festivals. I think Dr. Dan was from Atlanta, and I think he did a few festivals we'd done, and he had a badass drummer, so I would always, you know, go and hang out and introduce myself.
And where was that? That was in Alabama.
Yep, Alabama, Georgia. You know, back that in that time, I was in like Columbus, Georgia, and Auburn, Alabama, but kind of in the sticks, Tuskegee, Alabama. I like to live like at least 20 miles from this, you know, far enough from the city, but close enough you can go if you want to, but out far enough to where like mm-hmm. you got room, make noise, and not gonna make anybody mad, throw the ball to your dog, stuff like that.
Small community of people. Did you go to high school in that area?
I went to high school in Columbus, Georgia.
For all 4 years?
Yep, yep. My dad, we were at Fort Benning, and then he retired, which is in Georgia, and then we stayed in Columbus. You know, my dad wound up working sports medicine clinic there, so we stayed there. Yep, all 4 years.
Is that what superheroes do when they retire from saving people? They work at a sports medicine clinic?
I don't know. I guess so.
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Kind of.
That's a great way to retire. Just sit around with people and talk about stability muscles and what you need in a pinch.
Sounds right.
And were you drumming at that time?
I was drumming. I had started playing drum kit when I was a sophomore in high school.
And what started that? Did somebody give you a kit? Did you know you wanted one and you went and bought one?
Well, actually, I started playing clarinet when I was 11. And then in my fifth or sixth and seventh grade bands, they didn't have... It was just flute, clarinet, and trumpet. There was no other instruments you were allowed to play. So I picked clarinet, and then we moved. That was in South Carolina, and then we moved, and then this new band had... My idea was to go start on clarinet and switch to saxophone. And in this new band, they had all the, you know, all the instruments, and they had a drum section. And I was like, whoa, you know, what's going on back there? And I eventually talked my parents into letting me stop squeaking on the saxophone and give drums a try. I was a little late in the school year, so I didn't get to play all the cool instruments like snare and bass drum and timpani, but I had to play like bells and marimba and chimes and stuff. I got to play timpani every now and then, but that was actually good because it, you know, made me learn how to, I guess if I didn't start on that stuff, I may not have ever done it, so it was good to at least start there. But yeah, seventh grade, I guess, was when I started, when I was 12. And then in eighth grade, I finally got to play snare. And I did that for a few years. It took a while, you know, to build, get some drums and get a snare drum and stuff. So my sophomore year, my parents bought me a drum kit. And I started taking lessons right before that. And they and the private teacher talked about drum set.
Wow.
So, then one day I came home and it was just sitting there. So.
What's, and who bought it for you? Your parents just got
yep.
it and just
they got it.
Left it there?
They got it and yeah, basically. They just left it there.
You're going to need this type of thing.
I set it up and that was that.
Well, I wonder if it, I wonder if they think that they held you off for a couple of years because you don't want to... 12-year-old kid with a full drum set in the house, and that'll drive everybody insane.
The band directors were insistent that I had to learn, you know, snare, and private teachers were insistent that I had to learn my rudiments and stuff like that. So, yeah, it took a while. And the drum sets were kind of expensive, you know, so it took a second.
I'm sure your mom called the band director and was like, put him on triangle, please, put him on triangle.
Right. Actually, you know, it kind of goes with the military story. My parents were always very supportive of the practicing that I would do. Once I figured out that, you know, I could play drums for the rest of my life, I don't know why at first I didn't. Yeah. It was, I don't know. I was just like, this is cool. This is fun. But one day something clicked and I was like, whoa, I could do this for the rest of my life. You know, I started practicing. I was getting ready to go to college. And there was not a time I wasn't practicing. And they were always very supportive. But the only time my parents said, okay, It's just too much. We can't take it. Is I was playing double bass to a recording of kick drums going. So it's layered on top of it, and I'm blasting my parents' entire house with this for like at least an hour. And my dad came in and was like, "Look, you got to put your headphones in, and you got to do something." So that's the only time that they've ever been like, "Okay, I can't take it." Other than that, they've been very supportive.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, I played saxophone and I heard about it all the time.
I was a terrible sax player. I sounded like a dead duck. They were still supportive.
Yeah, sax is one of those things where you sound like a dead duck and then you don't, you know? There's no middle ground in sax. There's no half duck, half Coltrane in that area.
You still have your saxophone?
I thought I bought one the other day. I have one around here somewhere. I don't know where. I think I just, like, lost it in the shuffle, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's a saxophone. I never play it. I think we had it. I don't know. It's in New York in apartment that I moved into. It's, like, in one of the closets or something. And the next tenant was, like, probably never even found it. It's been in the same apartment. Somebody will find it. And probably, hopefully it'll find its way to, like, a 10, 11-year-old kid who wants to play saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fantastic.
Yep.
So you mentioned rudiments.
Rudiments.
There are some drummers in the audience, and they would like a little technical advice about the regularly practiced rudiments. 4-1.
4-1. Okay. Well, first, long roll, which is right, right, left, left. That's a pretty important one. Probably my favorite. And then after that, you have like your 5-stroke and your 9-strokes and 7-stroke. But they are all similar to the long roll. And then you have your paradiddle, right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. And then some flams, the flam, maybe flam accent, flam tap. And then you got your drags, your drag tap, which would be like right, right, left, left, right. And buzz roll. A lot of people forget about the buzz roll. They don't consider it like a rudiment, but I always approached it. You're going to practice all the others, you got to practice the buzz roll. That's a good one too.
What's the buzz roll?
The buzz roll would be, well, you know, like a long roll kind of sounds like, you know, like a gun, kind of like a machine gun. And then a buzz roll, yeah. Buzz roll would just be like, you know.
Interesting. Is it more hits per hand?
Yeah, it's also called a press roll. You're kind of like pressing the stick into the head. You're kind of crushing the notes so they're not.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's a long roll, but you press it in.
Yeah, basically. You're not really using your fingers the same way you would on a long roll. With the buzz roll, it's more just like you're pressing with the fulcrum of the stick and pushing it into the snare or whatever drum. So.
And do you think how long per day should a drummer do that set that you just named?
I think they should do that. Depends if you're just starting out or if you've been doing it for a while and you're just trying to get faster. But back in the day, you know, I would spend like an hour on the rudiments at least. And if I wasn't performing them, you know, like I was, if you were like going in front of like an all-state judge or something like that, where you would play them like slow to fast to slow, then I was doing some sort of like exercise to build the chops to play that rudiment faster. But if you've already got the skills, then, you know, maybe just run through them 15 minutes, something like that. Kind of like scales, you know,
For sure. You need the scales have to be pure fluid or, or your technique gets in the way. So when you started drumming, what kind of music, when you got the kit and you hooked it up and you're ready to play, what kind of music were you into at that point?
I was into Soundgarden, Smashing Pumpkins, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Primus. Yeah, those were the ones back in the day. Those were my big, I love those bands.
All great drummers. You could take those four drummers and you could say that's my top four and it would totally make sense.
I love, Matt Cameron was probably my favorite from Soundgarden, and then Chad Smith, Red Hot Chili Peppers. I could play his stuff easier than I could play, you know, like Jimmy Chamberlain's from Smashing Pumpkins. And then Herb, I just loved Herb from Primus. So the first, like, quote-unquote band I was in was just me and a bass player. The bass player was obsessed with Primus, so I got to go after that real quick, you know?
So you did all the Primus stuff?
We did the Primus stuff, and then he wrote stuff that was kind of Primus-y sounding, you know?
So would that be your top three drummers? Would be those three guys maybe... Chamberlain close fourth or something?
They would be in there. Dennis Chambers is my top drummer.
Really?
Yep. And then Vinny Caliuta.
Of course.
Those are, you know, like my virtuosos. They're like my go-tos. And then Steve Gadd. He's old school, of course. But as far as like not virtuoso in Chopland, but, you know, just favorite bands, drummers, those guys. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
What drummer do you think in their uniqueness made the band? Like, really elevated the band. You know, like, you have Neil Peart, who really elevated Rush. You have John Bonham, really elevated Led Zeppelin. You have Keith Moon. You have all these drummers where, in their uniqueness, added a showbiz factor to those bands that was undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number one?
Carter Beauford makes Dave Matthews Band, in my opinion.
I love that.
But that's also coming from a drummer, you know. So
he really does, though. He really does make that bad. I never thought about that before, but he is wonderful.
He's not Neil Peart, but he's kind of like Neil Peart in the sense that everybody in the audience is air drumming to his drumming, you know. And if you go to a Rush concert, everybody's air drumming to what Neil Peart was doing. So,
totally.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Chamberlain's drums and Smashing Pumpkins, they're for that band. I think it's... more about Billy Corgan, obviously, but I don't think they'd sound right with the... I mean, they took another drummer on for a little bit, but they brought Jimmy back for a reason, you know?
Yeah, Jimmy has that, like, patience in what he
patient
does.
Patient chops, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's all there, but he just is making you wait for it.
And then it's ferocious.
I like him a lot. Smashing Pumpkins' Gish was my favorite album of that era when that all happened.
Yeah.
That album was beautiful to me. Wow. So we have all these influencers. We have all these great drummers. Is there a style of drumming, you know, like you have your messy Keith Moon style and you have your super tight, you know, jazz guys and everything. Mm-hmm. Is there a style of drumming you'd like to do in the Disco Biscuits that you don't really have a outlet for?
Well, we kind of cover a lot of ground in the Disco Biscuits. I think we cover everything, you know. I mean... I like funk drumming, and I like kind of like fusion-y, lose the one for a little bit and play off of each other, kind of jazz fusion stuff, and we do that in the Disco Biscuits. So, but if I had to pick a favorite that I like to play all the time, obviously drum and bass, but funk also, the, like, you know, Dennis Chambers style funk. We get there in the Disco Biscuits.
We do get there. We go a lot of places. A lot of... free improv, where you can kind of get out whatever you want to get out. When you're playing during this free improv that the Biscuits do, what is your, like, consciousness telling you to be aware of while you're playing?
Don't rush. Don't drag.
Play the perfect tempo.
Is this the four? Nope, that wasn't the four. No, I'm just kidding. But those do kind of run through the head. But, you know, mostly I'm just listening and I'm trying to, like... make sure that we're all kind of going in the same direction that we want to be. And I'm trying, like, if you're playing a solo, then I want to do whatever I can do to, like, make you as comfortable and maybe play off of some of the things you're doing, but don't get in your way, you know. Something like, whatever I can do to, like, make it sound better. That's what I want to do. I'm kind of thinking, like, you know, whether it's stay out of the way or play a little more, whatever I can do to make it everyone it sound good is what I'm kind of thinking while we're going. And then obviously trying to keep in mind that we're moving on to another song, so don't forget.
Right, because there always is a little bit of purpose in what we're doing.
Yeah, and if we go a little far out and get out on an island, which is awesome and everything, then sometimes if we don't make our way back to shore, you know, it's a little awkward being stuck out on that island for a second there. So
yeah, it can be awkward. Some people say that's the best part of the show.
I know. I've heard that. I felt there's been times where, you know, like, I'm like, oh, that was terrible. And then we go backstage and we're all looking at each other, and then, you know, the fans come back, and they're like, that was the best ever. So it's like, obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about. So,
you know, that happens so often that, you know, it's just a fact at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you're playing the drums, you're in the improv, and we're in no hurry to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you're just playing, you're listening to the band members, you're playing, and you're doing the stuff you just talked about. Are you singing the rhythms that you're playing? Are you thinking consciously? How are you, like, feeling what you're playing?
It's a little of both. Sometimes I'm singing the grooves that I'm playing. Sometimes I'm singing, I hear your guitar part, and I'm kind of singing along with your guitar part, or maybe, you know, some Brownstein's bass or something like that, just so I can play right in with my kick drum and snare, I can play right in the pocket there. Or if Aaron's doing something that he's accenting, I'm trying to sing along with that. Or if we're changing tempos, I'll sing the song, like the head of the song, to make sure we're at the right tempo. But
oh, totally.
Sometimes in jams, it's like I'm just kind of like not, nothing. I'm not thinking anything. It's just kind of happening, which is what I think that's what we all are trying to get to. It's like you're standing at the top of the stage in the corner, just kind of looking down and you're just like, wow. This is badass right now.
I mean, what do you mean? Standing on top of the stage looking down at yourself playing the drums?
Yeah. Looking down at the band and just when we can get like to that moment, which it happens a lot, thank goodness. But when we get to that moment in the middle of a jam and it's just working and it's like nothing you can do is wrong. You're completely out of the way. You're not really thinking about what I need to be playing. You're just kind of playing what the music is giving you. You know what I mean? That's when I feel like I'm standing at the top of the stage and just kind of watching and just taking it all in.
Wow. Is that a meditation? How do you free your mind up to separate from your physical existence and then look down as if you're another person? How do you get to that state? Do you meditate regularly?
I do meditate, but it's actually, I've been doing that before I started meditating. That was just something that would, when I'm playing drums and it's just feeling good and the notes are happening, the pocket's like thicker than, you know, ever. I've always been able to kind of like just let go and watch. But yeah, I do meditate regularly. I started a few years ago, and then once Presley was born, I took it pretty serious. There, like, something happened and I had to go inside and figure out some stuff. You know, I have a temper sometimes, so I wanted to like get control of that temper and not, which I'm still working. I didn't want to be the same asshole I had been, so I needed to go inside and check on some things.
So you had a beautiful baby girl named Presley,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you feel like you looked at your life and said, I want to make changes and I'm going to use meditation to help me bring them about.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that. So what is what's the meditation? Is it every day? Is it once a week? What's your schedule?
It's changed over the years, but right now it's every day, and it's kind of long. It's not really, but it's like 30 to 60 minutes. But in the beginnings, it was like whatever I could do, 10 minutes. In the beginning, it was like twice a day. I do it in like the morning and in the evening, and then I was going through like some guided meditations, and then actually, Mikkel, do you know Mikkel?
Yes.
She got me started on some guided meditations, and I just kind of took it from there. She gave me 5 good ones, and then I kind of went and found my own. And then it was no guided meditations, just you and a dark room. And then I found a book by Light Watkins called Blissmore. That made the most sense for me. He just takes all the, like, kind of, like, eccentrical ethereal stuff, the meditation out, and just takes all the rules about, you know, you got to sit in lotus position and your back has to be straight and your head has to be tilted a certain way. He just takes it. He's like, hey, just sit down at the couch. Be as comfortable as you are when you're watching TV and just chill out. And if you go to sleep, that means you're tired and you should be sleeping, you know. And if you're thinking, well, that just means you got a lot on your mind and you need to be thinking. He disagreed with the shut your mind up and don't listen to the chatter. He just said, just let your mind chatter and then one day it'll stop chattering. And maybe for a second, and that'll be, it'll seem like eternity, but you'll realize it was only a second and then it'll get longer and longer. So I did that for a bit, and then actually I found a guru here in Parker, Colorado, and his name's Jim Strunk. I don't know if he wants me to say his name, but he's an amazing person. I wanted to say his name. But he's my guru, and I've been studying with him for probably, well, maybe.
Is his last name Strunk?
Yep.
Yeah, that's an unusual one. Yeah. A lot of content.
It is. I've been with him for about a year and a half. And so we do Kriya meditation, which is kind of like Yogananda's approach to meditation, but he had a teacher with the same lineage as Yogananda, but he also took from some other teachers, so it's got a little twist on it. So.
Well, I like the philosophy of don't get caught up in too much stuff and just sit there and let your mind go for a few minutes and then it'll quiet itself.
Yeah, yeah. Jim actually, he's the same thing, but Light Watkins was saying, you know, you can't stop your mind from thinking. If your mind stops thinking, you're dead, you know? So you want to be thinking. Right. And I like that people, because, you know, when you're meditating and you finally calm yourself, we work a lot. So a lot of us are going to start taking naps and we get frustrated. And Light was like, well, if you're falling asleep, that means you're tired. You need to get some sleep. So just take a nap and don't get frustrated. Meditate some other time.
Yeah, there it is. Meditation. Do you mantra?
I don't really do mantras. I have a couple of things that I say as I meditate, but there's not really... I don't have a mantra that I'm saying over and over and over and over and over again. I have something that I kind of say, like I do a few ohms and then meditate for a little bit, do a few more ohms, and then I have something I say, you know, I say I and the Creator are one, and I say that kind of a little bit, but I don't really like repeat it. I just kind of say it and kind of drift off with it and then try not to say think or say really do anything. Just sit there and take it in.
I wanted to do that. I was doing the transcendental kind of mantra, one word, two word mantra thing. Uh-huh. And then I heard that people were saying these blissful, holistic peace phrases instead in English.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking maybe I'd go try that out for a little bit. The mantras, they get boring after a while. You know?
Right, right. I mean, I guess the idea is you say it and you keep saying it and you just kind of forget you're saying it and then you're kind of entrancing yourself. But there's also something with, like you were saying, just something blissful and just let it be what it is. And it's kind of like you say it a few times and then you kind of forget you're saying it and then you're silent. And then you're like, oh, whoa, I'm meditating. Okay. And then once that happens, then you say it again, and then it falls off. And then you wake yourself up again. It's like...
You ever say it on stage while you're playing drums?
Yep. I meditate a lot on stage while we're playing. I
wow.
try to... Yeah, I do kriyas while we're playing and try to, you know, keep myself like... I'm not always successful, but I try to keep myself as open as possible and like calm. And I try to, like, I feel like it gives me, like, power and energy to play with, you know? So I try to tap into that.
Yeah, interesting.
I feel like if I...
It focuses you.
Yeah, it gets me focused, and it gets me faster to that point to where I'm not really thinking and playing the drums from my, like, head. I'm just letting go of it, and it's happening. I feel like that's... Meditation helps me. And I do it right before we go on stage, and then while we're on stage. Real quick. Just like you're checking in, you know?
Yes. It's amazing how just by checking in, it turns into a thing. You just check in all the time.
Uh-huh.
Those 5 minutes turn into 30s when you have the time.
Yeah.
Do you use an alarm when you meditate, or do you just come out of it naturally?
I do use an alarm. I wish that I could just meditate and come out of it whenever I want, but I got a little girl, and we have some time now, but, you know, time's not always... as available as I wish. So, yeah, I set an alarm so I don't sit there and meditate for 2 hours or 3 hours or something.
Wow. That's a legit meditation. I don't think I could meditate for after an hour. You know, I'm so trained by hour-long TV shows. Like, the second, that's like what my brain thinks an hour is. But let's talk about the Biscuits for a second on stage.
Okay.
There's a lot of crazy songs. Which one do you think is the hardest one to play?
So there you have it, folks. That is part one of the Alan O'Quinn Super Interview. If you'd like to listen to part two, it is the episode 30 of the Touchdowns All Day podcast. It's the very next episode. We're going to listen to a little bit more of Alan's drumming with the band, and we are going to talk a little bit more about COVID-19 and what I think is the reason that COVID-19 is going so gangbusters. And also, we are going to, of course, have part two of Alan's great interview where he talks a lot more about drumming and technique and some serious stuff that's relative to the Biscos, and we also discuss the current pandemic. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening. We'd like to thank the Osiris Podcast Network for helping us do what we do. I'd like to thank Rich Steele and Crunk Mike and Vic Sobti for being the core team. We also have a great group of people that help us all the time. Thank you to everyone. This is me signing out episode 29 in the books. Have a great day, folks.
Wear masks, communicate. Wear masks, communicate.